now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from Class to Cults and the Cheese in Between. The movies are B, the entertainment is grade A. I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, and this time out, I am looking back at the 1962 movie Hand of Death, and I'll get to it right after this.
This is the story of an experiment that backfired.
I'll get them out.
No, don't touch them.
The first thing we must do, Alex, is notify the authorities and get you to a hospital.
No!
What should we do? What can we do?
I don't know. We just can't call the police and have them shot like an animal.
Alex, it's been 5 hours since you injected that second area.
Alex?
Operator, answer. For God's sake, answer.
A strange and chilling climax.
Don't shoot him, please. Alex, don't run anymore. Please.
Hand of Death was released March 28, 1962, with a 60-minute running time. Your director here is Gene Nelson. Now, Gene Nelson had been an actor, had some bit parts early on in the late 30s and the early 40s, and then had been in a number of movies throughout the 50s and then some TV stuff in the 60s. Hand of Death is actually the first theatrical movie he directed, and then he eventually went on to do an episode of I Dream of Jeannie. He did a TV movie, Life with Archie. He did the cool ones in 67, so not somebody that I'm very well versed with. Your writer here and also your producer is Eugene Ling. I don't have much information about him. Your main star here is John Agar, and he is the biggest name star here. Music by Sony Burke. It was Production Company's Associated Producers Incorporated, distributed by 20th Century Fox. So let's get rolling on this. Scientist Alex Marsh has invented a powerful paralytic hypnotic nerve gas for the military that has been testing on sheep in the Mojave Desert. The local mailman blunders into the test site and is overcome by it, but recovers without ill effect. A confident Alex rushes to the home of Dr. Frederick Ramsey, his mentor, to tell him about it. Alex's girlfriend, Carol Wilson, and his colleague, Tom Holland, are also there. Alex designs the gas as a way to eliminate casualties at war by placing those exposed in a trance-like state for a certain amount of time, at which time the exposed are compliant to any command given to them. Although Carol feels the project is both dangerous and immoral, Alex continues his testing, vowing not to stop until he has found a way to eliminate the loss of life in a war. So, here we go. We have a movie that, again, this is, so just a little background on this. I've always seen the images from this movie, and then I don't remember ever seeing it all the way through, but I knew the concept, and I knew the creature. So at some point I must have seen at least the end of this movie. But this is, again, those 1960s kind of movies. And here we have someone who's trying to avoid the casualties of war. So there's, you know, the idea that you have an individual who is trying to save lives, in this case, through the use of science, through a drug that knocks you out so that you could gas an entire country, knock everyone out, take over, and then remind them, like program them to think that they are, you know, compliant with whoever is you know, now the occupying forces. It does seem immoral in what he's talking about, but at the same time, he's also trying to save lives. It's one of those things that, isn't that the old saying? The villain, you know, has to 100% believe in what they're doing. Not that John Agar is the villain here. He's more kind of the guy who gets, like, caught up in the wrong stuff. But it's like, the villain believes that he's 100% right. And he's like, well, you know, it might be immoral what we're doing, but I'm going to save them from dying, so isn't that better? It's again a good concept. This is a very, very low budget movie. But it's a good concept that I don't think I've ever seen explored again outside of, like, and I don't want to say Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of idea, because Invasion of the Body Snatchers, they're taking over and taking over your lives. But, like, I don't think I remember another movie where the idea is to, like, you know, knock out people and hypnotize them to believe that they are compliant with what you're doing. So, you know, a good concept nonetheless, I could give you that. Working in the lab, Alex accidentally spills a liquefied version of the nerve gas and, in the haste to clean up, accidentally gets some on his hand. The next day, Alex awakens to discover his extremities have darkened and have become irritated and painful. When his assistant Carlos touches him, Carlos withers away and dies. Panicking, Alex sets the lab afire to cover Carlos's death and heads to Ramsey's. When Alex stops at a gas station, the attendant dies after touching him, causing Alex to flee in horror. So yes, the hand of death is this. He is now the walking weapon. So what he was trying to do was save people's lives, and now what he's managed to do is make himself an engine of death. Arriving at Ramsey's house, Alex begs him to find an antidote, which Ramsey eventually agrees to do with the help of Tom. After the first attempted cure has no effect, a desperate Alex consumes the vial of serum Ramsey has been working on. Instead of curing his condition like Alex had hoped, the serum mutates him further, bloating and darkening his skin until he's unrecognizable. Horrified by the monster's appearance, Alex accidentally kills Ramsey and flees. Attempting to cover his now deformed features with a trench coat and a fedora, which we'll talk about more about in a minute, Alex tries to hail a cab, but the driver is unable to understand his muffled speech. And when the cabbie tries to get out, he is killed after touching him, and Alex flees in the cab. He later falls asleep at the beach in a deserted area where a small boy playing on the rocks almost discovers him accidentally. Okay, so a lot of people have said that this look here is the... they were inspired by the Thing from the, not the Thing from Another World, but the Thing from the Fantastic Four. Especially when Ben Grimm tries to hide himself in a trench coat and hat. The creature here is, as often seen on the poster, the poster often will make him appear to be orange, depending on the poster that's used. Where in the movie, he clearly is much darker than that. He's supposed to look burned. And I think a lot of that was trying to ape off of the Marvel Comics character as well and try to, you know, steal some eyes, so to speak. Alex later abandons the cab and stumbles towards Tom's house where Carol is staying. Breaking into the house, Alex attempts to speak to a terrified Carol but can only scroll a note in shaking handwriting that simply reads, "Tom, serum, help." The police soon arrive, and Alex flees to the beach where he's surrounded by armed police. Although Carol pleads for Alex to surrender, the mutated scientist, whose mind has become warped, lunges towards them and is promptly gunned down in the surf. And that's the part I remember. I remember him getting shot on the beach and them going, well, we got to get, like, something to get out of here. We need gloves and this, and, like, they can't touch him. So this received a lot of negative reviews when it first came out. you know, it was looked at, it was very low budget, and I think a lot of times that hurts it, especially in the 1960s. This was kind of fodder for drive-ins. This is exactly what this is supposed to be, and I think that's part of the problem. You know, not so much that it's a bad movie, isn't that? I mean, but people just like, ugh, okay, like, so he's got to tell. Like, there's just not the deeper story that I think some people were looking for. But again, when you're making a B horror movie, are you really always going for the super deep story? Like I said, I don't remember a movie where you have a scientist trying to create a gas that will knock people out and make them compliant once they come to prevent people from dying. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't remember one like this. And then in this movie stands out as being unique, which I think is really great. You know, there's a legacy that goes along with the makeup effects here. John Agar had said that his son, who was like two or three at the time, came onto the set and he heard his dad's voice coming out of the monster and it scared him half to death. That's one of the very famous stories about this. So there's also some idea of, and this is then the 60s. Well, we already talked about the Ben Grimm thing. But some people later on have now tried to like tie some racial overtones into it because his skin gets darker. But they explain that he's being burnt, like he's burning up. That's like, so I don't see it there. Some people would like to shoehorn that into everything. I'm just saying is, I'm not saying it that it, they didn't. I'm pretty sure this director had no intention of making anything political or racial or anything out of this. He's just trying to make a movie. And he had 60 whole minutes to get it done and try to get it finished. Anyway. Yeah. So this is a movie that, it came out in March, and then it was on a double bill with The Cabin of Caligari. Then you wound up having it. When it tried to go to Britain, they wound up hitting with an X certification, which meant you had to be, you couldn't be under the age of 16 to see it. Why, I'm not sure. There's nothing really there. But again, it does try to, like, you know, again, the British censor board is what they're going to do, and hit this with an X seems very tame by today's standard, but maybe in 1962 is kind of a problem. I actually caught this on FXM, which was rare for me to just kind of popping around. And I saw it was going to start in a couple minutes, so I kind of sat down and watched it, which is great. It's just kind of a movie that I don't think I have access to any other way. I don't see anything here about it being released. I mean, there was a DVD years ago, years and years ago, and obviously a VHS that circulated, whatever. But the DVD release came out in 2015, but there's no Blu-ray, there's no 4K, there's no restoration. So the copy I saw on FXM looked pretty good. Someone obviously took some time cleaning it up. But again, at 60 minutes, this is almost not even a movie. 60 minutes makes it like an episode of a TV show, or I should say like a streaming episode on a, you know, something online kind of thing. So did you see Hand of Death? Do you remember this? Are you a big John Agar fan? I know there are some of you out there. Do you remember this one? Did you think when you saw it, hey, that looks like The Thing? Or you saw the poster, like, hey, that looks like The Thing. Is this a Fantastic Four movie? Let me know. I'd love to hear from you guys, you know, kind of thing. Like I said, I'm trying to hit movies that, you know, are new to me. Obviously, some of these movies I've seen before. This was something just kind of I watched and I was like, oh, this would be a cool episode. I'm sure some people have never seen it. And I'm hoping that maybe you go spend some time and try to find it. So that about does it for this episode of Hand of Death. It's not that deep a movie to talk about. There's no real things here. But I want to say thank you to everyone for the downloads and the listens. I truly appreciate it. This is a labor of love, as I get paid exactly $0 to do this. And I'm just trying to put out content that hopefully you guys enjoy. All right, folks. So if you have, again, any questions, comments, any of that stuff, please email me. I will read them on the show. If you have feedback, whatever, love to hear it. So like we say here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters? Or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!